Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Greetings, travelers.
Okay, oh, man. So I know you have stuff, but I just have to say I was cleaning up what I call my murder room. Not going to explain why that is. Mark knows. And I found the October book, and I was like, I cannot wait for spooky season this year for me and you, because I think what we've decided to do is on our Patreon, we're going to read a chapter a day. And I think we're going to try to do some characterization and pick some characters.
Okay.
So I decided that yesterday when I found the book and it was spooky. So there we go.
Yeah, I think we should drag Bo in and Carrie in and as many as we can to do different voices. Maybe even get some of our Superhero League of Hoboken, you know, some of the other authors from Four Horsemen and some other people to just do different characters on different days. I think it would be awesome.
Yes, I think we should definitely arrange that. But in order to do that, you got to be on our Patreon because it's going to be Patreon only because of many copyright violations. So Okay, yep. Mark, what, you know, I woke up extraordinarily early today at your demand. What are we doing here?
Well, we've got a big, big deep dive coming up, but I do have breaking news.
Okay, what is breaking news?
This I actually missed. I miss this news. I'm so sad, but it's only a couple weeks old. So Loch Ness, our wonderful, you've been there. I've been there.
Oh, yeah, Nessie. Yeah.
They were out mapping the bottom of it with a submersible. And this is a famous submersible. It was the one in 2016 where they had the contest by the British government to name it.
Yeah.
And remember it won with that amazing name, Bodie McBoatface?
Oh, governments, this is why you should take advice, but never do the most votes, because
this is why republics are better than democracies. Yeah. But anyway, they of course said, no, we can't use that name. So they named it Sir Richard Attenborough, which I still think Bodie McBoatface is much better.
It is
no offense to Mr. Attenborough, but you know, or Sir Attenborough. But anyway, Bodie McBoatface was trolling along the bottom and it got tangled in something. Something grabbed it. And we're like, oh. And it comes up and it's got a camera attached to it from 1950s. And they couldn't figure out whose camera it was or whatever. And of course, the camera was a Nessie hunting camera from the 1950s. They found one of the guys who had designed it and what it was for. It was like a net that had cameras that were being dragged and they were like photostatic cameras, so every time the net would get dragged, it would flash four pictures real quick. This one got lost on the bottom of Loch Ness. They were able to find it. It still worked. It was still encased in the bottom of the silt. And so basically, they looked and they were able to develop the film. No Nessie, but a bunch of the bottom of the loch from the 1950s, which is pretty cool still. I thought that was neat.
Okay, the lead up to that, travelers, I'm sorry, the lead up sounded much better than what ended up happening there.
I still think it's cool that a camera from the 1950s that they dragged from the bottom of Loch Ness still worked.
No, that is badass. Badass. Yes. Don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying, I was like, you were like, and then they developed it, and I was like, and they saw a blurry picture of Nessie? I was so excited with my coffee.
Sadly, no. They think they got an otter, which is a common thing that they think is Nessie, but otters don't get 25 feet long like Nessie's supposed to be. So
that would be both cute, because I love otters, and terrifying.
It would be kind of cool. Yeah. If there was a giant otter in Loch Ness, that's just as cool as a monster, I think. So.
I mean, it's, yes, I'll give it that. Okay.
All right. Well, without any further Nessie stuff, we have to dive into this because it's just one of those things that people have emailed me about for a generation, and it's a rabbit hole. So we're going to go a lot. And then in this, when I get to a certain point, we're probably going to get demonetized. So this is going to be fun. At least the YouTube version will.
Awesome. Way to set that up too. I don't think I've had enough coffee yet this morning. So are we going to also piss off X? Cause that would just be the cherry on top.
Probably with this.
It's
Alien April. So we got to do this.
Okay, go
this
for it.
What I've been putting off because I needed to do more research. And then I found out I had to do more research and more research. So, all right. So we're going to get in the Wayback Machine. So you got snacks? We got breakfast snacks. So we got kolaches from Buc-ee's, which we don't normally get because they stopped making those all day. And I got my breakfast burrito, so we're good. Okay, so right off the bat, Wayback Machine, December 9th, 1965. And our UFO fans are immediately going to know this date. A lot of people aren't. But in that December night sky, there was a something was seen all over from Ontario, Canada. And then it goes into Indiana. And it goes over Ohio. Goes over a little bit of West Virginia. And it's sighted all these places. And it seems to be turning. But they're calling it a glowing, bright object, like a meteor.
Okay.
But it, you know, green and orange color.
Okay.
And then it comes right to Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, just outside of Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And this ball of light seems to make a couple zigzags and then level out and then crashes into a small forest near a field.
Okay.
Within minutes, Kecksburg Volunteer Fire Service comes running out, and witnesses say there's this strange thing there, all right? That this is one of those great unsolved mysteries that we don't know, right? It is the military is already there.
Okay.
On scene.
Well, that's a problem.
And then the volunteer firefighters say that this strange acorn-like device, or with no rivets, no things that look like it's been metalworked or anything, about the size of maybe a small car. So think of a 60s small car, about 10 to 12 feet long. And there were symbols around it that they said looked like hieroglyphics.
Okay.
Around the base of it. And then, like I said, military presence descends on the scene. And they take control and push everybody away and say, you saw nothing. And then one of the guys says in town that he saw a big flatbed truck with the device on it being covered by a tarp as they drove it out of town. There are stories that it went to a couple military bases. And we got to go into this guy named John Murphy. He was a reporter.
Okay.
And the host for WHJB radio right there. And he was on scene that night and talked to many of the witnesses. And he also managed to snap a few photos, apparently, of this device or whatever it was. Now, the military confiscates his film. But he managed to keep one concealed.
Oh, wow.
And you know, he's excited about that. So he's able to do that. So he prepared a radio show and he called it The Object in the Woods. And although his photos were grainy, he says it's definitely cone shaped and embedded in the ground.
Okay.
And now before the show goes out, two government officials arrive to speak with him.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen before this show goes out.
Right, right. Exactly. He's got that going on and he's dealing with this. So his show does come out.
Okay.
They had taken most of his research notes. They took his photographs. They took his audio recordings. So this edited version comes out.
Okay.
And now Murphy died in 1969, just a couple years later.
Oh, wow.
While on holiday with his family in California. And he was killed in a hit and run. The driver was never found.
That's mildly suspicious.
Just a little bit, right?
Like, very.
The military comes in and says it was a meteor.
Okay.
But they didn't find it. They said it was too embedded in the ground. And okay. That becomes the official story. And that's what all the newspaper headlines of the day. Yeah, run with, except for John Murphy.
Okay.
So that's where we're at with this. And it just kind of disappeared for a little while. But the witnesses all talked about it, right?
Right.
Now, the military said, nope, we were never there. Don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And now Canada tracked this thing. But America says, no, we didn't track anything. There was nothing that night. Don't know what you're talking about.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Yes, exactly. And
I love it.
So I'm going to go back to a couple of the witnesses. One is a guy named Mr. Eichler, and he was He was 13 years old, and he was playing in a baseball field. And then he described it as, quote, predominantly green glowing object with wisps of yellow, purple and orange colors that shot across the sky. Okay. I like that. I thought that was very pretty.
Yeah.
Now, one of the guys here was a guy who lived in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. His name was Stan Gordon.
Okay.
Now, Stan was so invested in this, he grew up to become one of our Stan Gordon, the famous UFO researcher.
Oh,
now he was 16 and he was listening to a radio program on KDKA radio when the host was taking calls from the witnesses who were describing this. We cannot find that recording anywhere. That day of archives is just gone. There's actually a month gone from KDKA from their archives.
Oh, wow.
All of December of 1965 gone.
Okay. So,
do you smell cover up? I smell cover up, right?
I would say it sounds a lot like a cover up. And it also, you know, it's in. Okay, go ahead. Continue.
Are you sure?
Now I'm invested.
Okay, you're invested. Okay, so John Hayes was another kid. He was 10 years old playing football. Now he lived nearby and he says, you know, he didn't see it. But when he went to the house, his dad had the radio on and they heard about something crashing in the town of Acme, which is not Acme from Looney Tunes, but close enough. And he said,
sounds like it.
And then his mom looked out the window here in Kecksburg and says, that's not Acme. It's right out there. Look at all the cars on the hill across the way.
Oh, wow.
Now the military comes in. Like I said, everybody said military came in. But again, they said, nope, we didn't track it. Don't know what you're talking about. Now, this guy named Hayes, you know, that young boy, John Hayes, he said that the military came in and set up a command center in his family's two-story house overlooking the woods because it let them look over the area and they had a working telephone. Remember, this is the 1960s. Not everybody had a working phone at that time, especially rural Pennsylvania, right on the edge of the Appalachians. And the first thing they did was told their parents, send the kids to bed. Right?
Oh.
So, well, of course, the kids didn't go to bed.
No, of course not. We wouldn't go to bed.
The bathroom was downstairs, and Hayes said, I had to go to the bathroom a lot that night for some strange reason.
I love that.
So he's like, there were men in uniforms, men in black suits. And it was clear the men in suits were in charge and they were over the military and they apparently had a lot of clout, according to his quote.
Okay.
And he also had a good view out his window of all the comings and goings, right? And he couldn't really see down in the hollow, but he saw guys in radiation suits walking down with a box, a big box.
Okay.
And then they didn't come back. They didn't bring the box back. They came back, but the box didn't. And he said they were using his phone constantly, But he managed to find, his parents kept all their phone bills. And the December phone bill had no calls at all.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a lot of control to be able to, like, say, no phone activity back then.
Yeah. So, that's, you know, pretty crazy, right?
Yes, very.
Now, a couple guys said later that it wasn't 10 to 12 feet, that it was the size of basically two suitcases. But that kind of goes opposite of most of the other stuff. And then this one guy, the truck driver, saw it. This other guy was a Pittsburgh jazz vocalist named Jerry Betters. And he says he saw the military truck driving it away with the white star in the door. And he drew a picture of it and had it notarized.
Wow.
Okay. So where does this strange object wind up? Right? They say Wright-Patt Air Force Base. We've talked about Wright-Patterson so much. Everybody talks about Area 51. We know Wright-Patt.
Yeah.
We know that's the real Area 51. That's where all the aircraft testing is. That's where a lot of things are. That's supposedly Hangar 18. Maybe this is the device at Hangar 18.
Well, you should explain what Hangar 18 is.
That's a military code, supposedly. No one's ever proven this, that it's where they keep the secret devices for testing, the crashed aircraft, where Roswell's crash ended up, where the Kecksburg ended up, where the Flatwoods, whatever landed there, ended up. So all these famous UFO cases supposedly went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And Hangar 18 was their code word for the hangar. There is no Hangar 18 at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base on any of the official documents. There is a Building 18. And what everybody says is that's just some warehouse, but it's actually a secret entrance to the underground tunnels of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Wow. This is very military. And I when you said warehouse, I thought of Warehouse 13, which is a fun TV show.
Yes.
And I also thought of Indiana Jones when they're putting the Ark in the warehouse. I was like,
Yep,
okay, cool. So they think it ended up there.
Yep. And now modern theories have said it was a Russian satellite that had crashed. Because remember, this is in the early 60s. And you know, Sputnik was up there, and one was up there called Cosmos 96. And it may have crashed in that area. But nowadays, Freedom of Information Act and other things like that, we did find that Cosmos 96 came down almost that exact same day, but it landed in Canada.
Oh.
So that kind of eliminates that theory of what it was. Now, there are more recent debunkings that say, okay, we finally know what it really was. Now, this one came out in 2015.
Okay.
And this one said that it was actually the General Electric Mark II reentry vehicle that had been launched by the Air Force as a spy satellite, but it quickly fell out of orbit. And we didn't want the world to know we were using spy satellites. So that's why it was a big cover up and everything. Now, yeah.
That's the exasperated sigh of I'm calling bullshit.
But that would explain a metal craft crashed into the ground, you know, buried halfway, and why they would have had the Geiger counters and walking down with the radiation stuff, because it was powered by a nuclear core. So
yes, that
it makes sense.
Sure.
So for those of you at home who are playing the, okay, this is what it could be, this is what it is. All right. Now, our good buddy Giorgio, right, from Ancient Aliens and all that, he dove into this story because you do. Also, Unsolved Mysteries did an episode on this. Unsolved Mysteries made a model of this thing for filming, and they filmed it in Kecksburg, and the model is life size. It's a giant acorn with strange symbols around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
Kecksburg loves that so much that they put it up there as a display. And when you drive into Kecksburg, you can see the giant acorn, they call it. And they have the Kecksburg UFO Festival every year to celebrate this event now. Remember, for decades, they didn't talk about it. They just pretended it didn't exist and all that. So it's super secretive, whatever it was. And we know there was a cover-up because there's so many things just gone, right? So weird. That GE Mark II reentry vehicle seems to be the more modern explanation because it looked like a cone.
Yeah.
And it would have been very much like that. And it was definitely used in the 1960s. And that might have fit. And the other thing is it had four control jets. So that might have fit why it was steering and trying to avoid hitting the town and why it went into the clearing and all that. So, and it would, and it was copper, which would explain kind of the green flames coming off of it. And for those of us who love Acquisitions Incorporated, we'd go green flame, but that's another thing.
Make an obscure reference in every episode.
Now. I got to go down. I'm going down. Bunny, believe me, we're about to go down a major bunny trail. I'm trying to hold off on it, but I so want to go into this. So, but we talk about all these witnesses and stuff, and it's so great that we have all this. So Stan Gordon has one of my favorite quotes about this. It's a mystery. And after so many years, it'd be great if we could find out the conclusive information about what fell from the sky that night in 1956. But it's probably one of those things we'll never have an answer for. And John Hayes, he's been studying this thing for over 50 years. And he's like, I know I'll never get a straight answer, but I know they went down in an empty truck and they came back with something on it. Right? That's all we really know. So with all that said, I'm going to jump into this before the break. I was going to save it for after the break, but I gotta. Okay,
because what I think is interesting is this reminds me a lot of Flatwoods. That's what I'm going to say. It's
very similar.
The only difference so far, unless something comes up, and keep in mind, listeners, my fellow travelers, I have not heard this story before, which we all know marks into the deep, dark, weird world of weirdness, and so he is very likely to disappear mysteriously before I do. But one of the things that I find that's different about this particular story is thus far you haven't told me about any of the witnesses reporting any sickness, because in Flatwoods they got sick with radiation poisoning when they got close to this thing. Also, they didn't quite describe all the colors that they're describing here with the lights, right?
Right. It was just a big fireball type thing.
Yeah. So, okay. They have a festival.
But they did find a roll, like a ball shaped craft that had crashed into the ground there. So,
yeah. And so this is an acorn shaped craft.
Yep.
Or acorn shaped object. I'll use the right words, because right now it's an object that was just rolling around in space. And just for people, if you ever get a chance, go look up YouTube videos of satellites and stuff like that, the space debris, even, parts of space station and stuff like that coming into orbit. It doesn't do a zigzaggy pattern around an area. That's not quite how that works. It's sort of crashes, Yeah. So just a couple little fun things for people to think about, because none of the witnesses reported getting sick, right?
Right. Okay. Nothing like that. So.
Okay.
I'm
up to speed. And
okay.
Go for it.
All right. We're gonna get back in the way back machine. We're going back in time.
Okay. Well, I'm down for costume changes and the snacks that we put, which is mainly
this costume change might get us canceled. Okay, because we have to go back to Germany in 1936.
I don't love that. I'm not changing. I'm not changing costume. Okay, good.
Yeah. So 20 years earlier, other side of the Atlantic, we're in war-torn Europe, and the Third Reich is busy developing technologies for an upcoming. They're pretty convinced. We're not just going to go this local stuff. We're expanding operations. There's this guy in charge. He's a nutcase. He wants to take over everything instead of just the little breathing room that he wanted. He's decided we're going to take a lot of things, but we're going to need some special things. So it's funny. We talk about, the joys of the modern world we're in. A lot of that came about because the scientists of Germany were developing some of the technology we use now every day.
And science is not bad for science sake. Let's clarify.
We brought them all over here as much as we could under Operation Paperclip. So that's another, we'll do a deep dive on that another day. So we're going to Freiburg, Germany, 1936.
Okay.
And this happens right before this strange surge in the technology of, I've got to say the word, the Nazi technology. So
are not pro-Nazi.
No. Same right here now.
Idiot. I'm glad he was dead in a ditch on fire. Anyway.
When AI is probing this episode and says, you said the word. No, we're saying these are bad people. Yes. Some of their technology was way advanced, and some of it we use. So if you're driving a Volkswagen, there you go. But anyway.
Oh, they got the new Volkswagen buses. Have you seen
the
Volkswagen buses? Which makes me very excited. But I was recently, I'm sorry, going on an Erica buddy trail. And
Erica buddy trail.
On a break, so let's see. But I didn't realize... California, it's funny because we're talking about Pennsylvania, which seems to be a hot spot, a very weird crap, right?
Right.
California seems to be a centrifuge, like Ohio, of serial killers for some reason.
Yeah.
And there was a serial killer that I recently was reading about that also, like Ted Bundy, drove a beige VW bug. I don't want to get into the likelihood of that. And now I want to go down a whole entire trail of how many serial killers were VW fans. But keeping in mind that back then that was a very affordable car and that's what the intention was of it.
That was the whole point. Yeah, that way if they had to lose it, they weren't out a lot. So
yes, but you know what, Mark? I'm going to make you save it and we're going to take a quick break and
Okay. No, just real quick. This is a quick bit. So there was basically some sort of crash in the Black Forest there.
Oh.
And we don't have much documentation on it, except that the SS went there and recovered something and took it to the Third Reich headquarters in Wellesburg Castle. And then right after this, they developed the V1 and V2 rockets.
Oh,
so now we'll get into this after the break.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Prepare to be devoured. The Wolves of Wharton is a 6-part complete book series by Erie Travels producer, Bo Lake. It has been called dark and visceral, steamy, dramatic, and a fresh take on the werewolf mythos. If you like action, adventure, a large serving of body horror, and some steamy relations, the Wolves of Wharton series is for you. Pick it up wherever books are sold, or at linktree.com/bow_lake.
Okay, Mark, so you dropped something kind of major right before our break.
Yeah.
So all of the sudden, these rockets came out, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Because they say there was this strange technology from this whatever they captured and recovered.
Oh, wow. And
supposedly it could reach speeds at 17,000 miles an hour, which was a craft they developed from this, which is called the Hennebu, which is this. I'm mispronouncing these German words. My apologies. This is from Germany's Wunderwaffe program, Wonder Weapons.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, like the Luftwaffe was the planes. Wunderwaffe was basically miracle weapon or universal weapon would be another translation of that. So, okay. Supposedly this ship they developed from whatever they recovered, the Hennebu, used anti-gravity propulsion,
which
we still haven't mastered to this day. If we had anti-gravity, that would be great. Not going to do a big science explanation of anti-gravity. We can have our friend Neil deGrasse Tyson come on and talk about that. But basically,
or you can listen to his podcast where he explains it in great detail.
It's basically, if we could do that, it would make space travel so much easier. It would, it's not a, not zero gravity. It is anti-gravity. But anyway, it also had armor that was completely resistant to heat.
Oh, wow.
Frictionless and all that. So now we learn about this device, and this is why it's tied into Kecksburg so much. Our wonderful friend, Giorgio, was one of the guys who went down this rabbit hole first. And that is a device called Diglock or Diglocka. And that is the Nazi bell. Does bell ring a bell? All right.
Wow.
What is also bell shaped? Acorns?
Yeah.
The acorn craft. All right. So this is according to an author named Igor Witowski.
Now that is a name right there.
That is a name. That's his name. He's Polish. And in the year 2000, he wrote a book called The Truth About the Wonder Weapon. And he reveals Diglocka, now known as the Nazi bell. And he says he found all these leaked Nazi documents from one SS officer named Jacob Spornberg. And, he says an anonymous source in Polish intelligence gave him access to this.
Okay.
And that on the condition that he could translate them, but not make copies.
Okay.
And he says basically near the Czech border in Poland at a facility called Derise, he says that the bell was housed underground.
Okay.
But then during live experiments, it started floating upwards and they had a hatch opened that it, so it could fly out of this underground cavern. And to keep it in place, because they couldn't control it, they had giant chains connected to a concrete structure that they now call the hinge or the Nazi hinge. And the Nazi, it looked like Stonehenge, basically. And it's still there in Poland, the hinge.
Oh, wow. There.
So modern people, we'll get into what they think the hinge is later, but the bell itself was around 10 to 15 feet high,
okay,
and around 9 feet across at his base. And around the base were strange hieroglyphic symbols.
Oh,
that sound familiar?
Yes, very.
All right. And it was very heavy metals made up the things.
Okay.
And now the interior stuff from these early documents say it's pretty crazy. They said it was an anti-gravity propulsion device, and two cylinders would counter-rotate, and then there was a substance similar to mercury, but violet in color.
Okay.
And they called it Zerum 525. And it filled the cylinders, and apparently it was extremely volatile and had to be stored in a special case. And the case was then encased in lead because it was so radioactive.
Okay.
All right. And basically anything within 200 meters of it would suffer injury.
Wow.
And 5 of the 7 original scientists on this died.
Yikes. And
some people said they had like crystals in their tissues in the blood.
Oh, I don't love that. No.
Yeah. Now, there was a mirror material in the bell, and this mirror supposedly was very Harry Potter-ish, where it could show you the future and the past while the device was active.
Okay.
So it's a time machine.
Wow.
That flies. So Doctor Who would be very proud.
Wait, let me clarify. So it had hieroglyphics. Do we know where the hieroglyphics were from, like Egyptian hieroglyphics or Mayan hieroglyphics?
Vaguely hieroglyphics. Every description of it, you can't translate them. So they're not proper hieroglyphics.
Well, they're not hieroglyphics from things, a language we know. Wow. So, and then crystals in the blood, which sounds absolutely terrible and painful.
Yep.
And they think literally this time machine goes backwards, forwards, everything?
Yeah, it could definitely see it according to the documents, but they were going to test it. And then their plan was to send a troop back in time. Now, this is towards the end of the war now.
Okay.
The Nazis are losing. They've been testing this thing for years, but they couldn't use it properly. But now they're throwing everything at the wall. And they send a group into this thing. And they're going to travel back in time and give Hitler every mistake he's made, every bad thing he's done, so that way it won't happen, and create an alternate timeline.
Okay.
And the ship went up, according to the documents, and disappeared. And they expected it back in minutes, and it never came back.
Wow.
What's interesting, though, is Wernher von Braun, right? The great rocket guy who developed the V1, V2, then came to America and helped us with our space program before getting, finally shut down. The wonderful Tom Lehrer song about Wernher von Braun is great. But in 1970, he was interviewed by Alan Greenfield, who is another famous UFO researcher. And he said, how did you guys become so technologically more advanced in the 1960s? And von Braun just simply said, we had help from others. And he said, well, who? Did you mean extraterrestrials? And von Braun just nodded and walked away.
Oh, wow.
Now, the problem with all this is that Igor Witowski is the only guy who came up with this stuff. And that was in the 2000s. So is it real? Now, that site in Poland was real, and they did use slave labor to build it, and many of the slaves died of some sort of radiation-type sickness. You were talking about sickness.
Okay.
So the modern theory is that the hinge was actually a cooling tower, and that they were trying to make an atomic bomb. And that would explain the acorn-like appearance.
No, that does make sense. You know, it's interesting because you're talking about rockets and stuff, right? And early science. Okay. I am not saying that this doesn't have alien implications.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that we have to remember is we didn't have nearly the technology that we have right now. So if you're talking about thinking you're going to send up a rocket, the likelihood that you'd understand how much fuel and stuff and how far it could go. So something could have been launched, got caught in orbit, and then circle, 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 something happens, some failure, and then it falls back down again. Yeah. I mean, again, look up the space debris that is up in the entire thing. Like, stuff falls out of the sky all the time. Yeah. And not like alien stuff, but just stuff falls out of the sky. And people go, oh my gosh, what is that? Well, that's, you know, a falling piece of space debris, right?
Right.
So, Acorn, but it's interesting. So, continue, because this is, I don't like it when one source, you don't like it when one
source. I hate one source. I hate one source stuff. Now, the big thing with this is some people say, well, they traveled in time, but they didn't go back. They went forward, and it went up too high, couldn't control it, and that's when it crashes in Kecksburg in 1965.
So that makes sense to me because, I mean, we're going to do episodes, I'm sure, in the future on time travel, which is a whole entire its own thing, right? Because there's a lot of people who try to use photographs where they say this person has a smartphone in the future or whatever, right? But that makes more sense to me than going backwards, believe it or not. Going forwards makes a lot more sense.
All right, so now we've got one more quick rabbit trail, which isn't quick at all, but it's something close to something you're familiar with, all right? So this is the next tie in this weird chain, okay?
Okay.
The Wunderwaffe, the Wonder Weapon developers, remember those guys?
Yes.
So supposedly they decided, not just Poland, they had another location. And this is in your favorite place that you just recently visited.
Ooh.
So, okay. So first off, we have to go back in time again.
Oh, I'm so glad that Bo stocked this machine because otherwise it would be a pain in the butt to keep doing this. Yeah.
So 1946.
Mm-hmm.
So this is after the war. So we've gone a little forward from, you know, Die Glocke. But this time, do you remember Admiral Richard Byrd? Have you heard Admiral Byrd?
I'm familiar.
Okay. Well, let's go a quick brief Admiral Byrd here. He was probably one of the greatest explorers of the 20th century. In 1926, he flew the first crew over the North Pole, although there is some controversy if he actually made it. 1927, he nearly claimed the Ortieg Prize for the first transatlantic flight, but his plane crashed during the attempt. And while he was getting it fixed, Charles Lindbergh made the flight that did it. But he almost made it. And in 1928, he launched the first expedition to Antarctica. And in November 28th of 1929, he actually flew over the South Pole, becoming the first person to fly over both poles. And that got him the rank of Rear Admiral. He was 41 years old. He was the youngest ever to achieve that at the time. I think there's a 39-year-old now. But anyway, we'll get into him later. But in 1934, he returned to Antarctica and basically spent 5 months alone at a meteorological outpost.
Okay.
And it almost killed him. But he made his memoir Alone, which is his biography of that time. But he also, in 1938, was invited by this guy named Adolf Hitler to participate in Germany's Atlantic expedition, and he politely declined. They weren't at war yet, but he was not happy with the guy.
Yeah.
But a year later, he actually leads his third Antarctic mission, and it was funded by the U.S. government, and that was during World War II. But from 1941 to 1945, he served in the South Pacific. He was awarded the Legion of Merit twice. So this guy, we got to take pretty much everything. He's about as vetted as you can get, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in December of 1946, he has a task force assigned to him. 13 ships, 33 aircraft, and 4,700 personnel in a thing called Operation High Jump.
Okay.
And they are, the official purpose is to establish a military presence on Antarctica. And it was to expand territorial claims and test the feasibility of an airfield and test troops in winter conditions. This is after the war, but we knew Russia was, we weren't happy with Russia at this point. And the Cold War was beginning, so we needed to see if we could fight in the cold. You know, the dawn of the atomic age, right? And he, Burge, thought intercontinental ballistic missiles, if they were to follow, you know, he knew bombers had been flying over the poles, and a missile would go over the poles. It would be real easy from Russia to hit U.S. targets or British targets. So official story is severe weather cuts the mission short very early, February 47. So it's cut short by like a year. They were supposed to be for a long time.
Yeah.
And so they were only there for a few months. Now there was 11 journalists on this thing. So as much as secret as it wasn't completely secret, right? There were reporters and they were reporting back. And there was a documentary made about it using some of the footage from that. It won the best documentary in 1948. It was called The Secret Land.
Oh.
Kind of an interesting title, right? For
Antarctica.
Now, there was a theory of what happened.
Okay. I cannot wait to hear what this theory is.
All right. According to the story, our wonderful friend the Nazis also went to Antarctica to see if they could develop a base down there. Why would they develop a base in the Antarctic? Well, the official reason for the Germans to do this was to develop a new port down there in case they had to go to Argentina. Now, Argentina says there were several U-boats that at the end of the war went to an Antarctic base and then came up to Argentina and may have even had some of the high-ranking, you know, Nazi officials on them that were escaping the war. Supposedly even Adolf Hitler, who had escaped, and that was a fake ashes, or they brought his ashes. That was another story. So, but those are stories. We're not getting into that.
Yeah.
Not getting into that. So back to Admiral Byrd.
Yeah.
He takes a flight and he's flying over this area. And supposedly he has a secret diary because everything else got confiscated. Right. And when he came back from his flight over the South Pole, they come back and they interview him. One of the reporters, he says, we have to be prepared. There could be an attack. We have to develop defenses fast because there could be an attack from the poles, something that could fly from pole to pole.
Oh my God.
Attack us easily. So this secret diary shows up, right? And this is supposedly from his son. And this diary is still in print. And we'll put a link to it in the show notes. And he talks about this phrase that Admiral Byrd uses a lot called the land beyond the pole. And he says that there was a green land that he flew over that had streams and valleys. Now, this is Antarctica. There's not supposed to be anything down there but snow and ice. He flies over a mountain range, which we have documented that mountain range now. And it wasn't until the 60s, years later, that they actually documented this mountain range. But when he got over it, there was green land and possibly large animals living there.
Are we doing land before time and going back to the dinosaurs? Is that where we're going with this?
Possible. His description kind of fits that. And supposedly, his radio picks up. German. And they tell him, welcome, Admiral. Don't worry, we've got control of your craft. And he basically gets tractor beamed down to a base there.
Okay. And
the Nazis say they have made contact with someone from the Hollow Earth. And that they've decided they are no longer believing in the Aryan master race, but these people in the Hollow Earth are actually the Greys. And they've been down here for decades. And they want us to not use nuclear weapons. So your job is to go up and promote peace and protection. And we're sending you back out. And now, on that trip that he made that day, he notoriously wrote down everything. That was his big thing. There are 3 missing hours on that day.
Weird.
From his flight. So this supposedly he handed this secret diary to his son and said, yeah, this is what we've got. Crazy story. He never talked about it again. He wouldn't talk about this operation.
Yeah.
Again. Now, we do find out later the Nazis did go to Antarctica. But the reason they were there maybe a few hours on the land. So not enough to establish this military base that to talk to aliens or anything like that. They did land. It's on an island called Queen Maud Land. They tried to claim it. They stayed there and for about 30 days. It took them about 20 days to get to that location. So I don't know if you can build a base in 10 days in the Antarctic fighting the weather there. But the main reason they did it was whales. They up in near Germany at the time, North Sea, whales had been nearly hunted to extinction. But the Germans were building for, possibly a potential conflict with the entire world. And they knew they were not going to have exports anymore and imports anymore. So they needed whale oil for margarine. So,
oh, ew.
So, of course, we make it differently now. But back then, hey, that was the way you did it. And he was worried that the Germans weren't going to have their, I can't believe it's not butter. So
That's so gross.
But they never really established a major presence there. Now, they did. It wasn't until 2016 that we actually discovered a Nazi base in the Arctic. We found about 500 artifacts on an island called Alexandria Land. And there was a base there called the Schatzgraber, which translates to treasure hunter.
Oh.
And that they're saying was a weather station. Why would you call weather station treasure hunter? Where that would be a whole nother episode of talking about Nazis seeking secret treasures around
the
world.
We've seen those episodes. They're called the Indiana Jones movies.
Exactly. And supposedly this one, they were looking for Thor's hammer. That they were convinced that Thor's hammer was a real weapon. And they needed it to fight the Allies. And so they sent this base up there. Now, the big thing about this base, it was abandoned within a year. And the reason being, we actually have their diary, was they were very, very hungry because their supply plane crashed. And so they went and ate polar bear. But the polar bear was undercooked. And so they got roundworm and they were all poisoned and had to be evacuated. Now, the only one who supposedly survived was the vegetarian. So,
wow.
No one really knows why that base was there. The treasure hunter, the guy who ran it was a guy named Schatz. So maybe it was a play on his name. But I like to think that the Thule Society, which we'll have to do an episode on that, was actually digging for Thor's hammer. I love that. I just think that's a great idea.
Well, the one thing from a science standpoint and no other standpoint, because screw them, was that they really tried to push a lot of boundaries in a way very hurtful. I mean, they had that whole thing they were doing with identical twins or triplets, which was disgusting. And then they were trying to breed a lot of animals, which is funny because we're talking about the dire wolves that we brought that up on a previous episode that have been recreated, And every time I see something like that, I'm like, oh, that's cute. Did we not watch Jurassic Park? Like, did But they did that. They brought back some creatures that were long dead. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's so bizarre, but I think it's great they were going after Thor's hammer. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. All right. So we got one more back to Antarctica. We have one more fun thing. And that is the Americans go down there and dropped several nuclear weapons in the air over Antarctica. And high altitude detonated them.
Why would you do that?
Why would you do that, right? Unless you're destroying an alien base in the middle of the Antarctic. But America says, we didn't do that. But we know that that operation did happen. But America says it happened 1,500 miles north of the Antarctic. And it was done jointly with the Russians to determine what happens if we blow up nuclear weapons at high altitudes. Because we want to see if the fallout comes down. It did not, but, or they say it did not, but they did find out that it screws up electronic equipment.
Ooh, I don't love any of that.
Right. That's why we learned about EMPs and stuff. So the conspiracy theories don't 100% add up, right?
Yeah.
But they also don't completely break this, right? Now the secret diary of Admiral Byrd, the main problem with that was that the writer of it wrote for Amazing Fantasy. Which is the same writer who found this diary and transcribed this diary. That same writer would work with H.P. Lovecraft, who had written the whole Mountains of Madness, right?
Before,
which is a lost civilization. There's some Hollow Earth stories in Amazing Fantasy. That island in the Arctic is now part of the Russian Federation, and they are looking at actually building a base in that island.
Oh, wow.
Let's just hope they don't eat polar bear meat.
Let's just hope they do a better job of it.
Yeah, exactly. But that's also a little scary because things are not always the best with them. But so we've got Antarctic base. We've got Russian scientists discovering an Arctic Nazi base. We've got the Kecksburg incident. We've got Die Glocke, which has disappeared from history, but we're not sure it even existed. So this all is, who knows? It's just an odd story, and it's a fun bunny trail. If you connect the dots, this is where you're standing at the wall with the red strings attached to all the things, and you're trying to explain to your friend that wonderful meme. that's what this is. And I can't say 100% that any of this is bogus. There's enough history here that goes, ooh. And that's why I went down this rabbit hole, and I'm glad you joined me. Now, you've been to Antarctica.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that. And I've been to Kecksburg. I'll tell you a little bit about that. And that'll be our travels for today, travelers.
It's interesting. I found out that Neil deGrasse Tyson, my best friend in the world now, did his episode on his trip to the Antarctic recently. So what I would say is this. We did an episode, so you can go back and listen if you haven't listened to it, where I described a lot of the things. It is absolutely beautiful. If you go down there, I would recommend going on the Seabourn. I think it's the Seabourn Venture, but if you look up Seabourn Cruises, we're including a link for this podcast. It is an amazing cruise line, and you get a chance to go on Zodiacs onto Antarctica, and you get to see all the amazing creatures that are down there. And if you want to pay a little bit extra, you can go in a submersible and you can see what's beneath. And they do talk a lot about the bases there and what's there. You can also find other cruises that go far deeper into Antarctica. If you get seasick easily, I would say get a prescription for seasick medicine before you go, because this is not like a little bit of ocean movement. This is the entire ocean is moving. So keep that in mind. But I highly recommend it. I think it's amazing and fun. And remember, layers, layers, layers. So that is my recommendation. Talk about Kecksburg.
All right. So Kecksburg has the UFO Festival every year. It's usually in July, not December. So don't worry about driving in the snow. This year, it's actually July 18th through the 20th. Sadly, we won't be there for that one. We'd love to, but we've already been booked that weekend. Check our Erie Travels website for events. But if you want to go, it's an amazing town. You can see the Acorn. Some of our favorite vendors will be there. And they have speakers every year, and they're still announcing them for this year. I think the big ones this year is Stan Gordon going to be there. And that's exciting because he was OG. And then our good friend Dave Spinks is going to be there. So those are the only two that I know of, but they will be announcing more. Just go to the Kecksburg UFO Festival website. They'll have all the details. I'm super excited. Stan Gordon's going to be there. I wish we were there, but just didn't fall into the cards this year. But man, what a rabbit trail, right?
It was an absolute rabbit trail. Got many snacks in the Wayback Machine, which I love. But with that, Mark, why don't you take us away?
And again, Patreon members, thank you so much for keeping us afloat. And be ready for October. Get your Lonesome Octobers. A new print just came out of that. So it's back in print again by Zelazny. Excited. We've got so much ahead. Check our Erie Travels page for our appearances. Our new book is really coming. We promise it should be up for pre-order very shortly if it isn't already. Dark Side of the Smokies. We talk a little bit about UFOs in that, but sadly not giant acorns.
No giant acorns.
But we do talk a lot about chestnuts, but we'll get into that in the book. So, but Eric and I are going to start be making appearances on several more podcasts promoting the book. So keep an eye on our website. We'll try to link to as many of those as we can. Now, all that said, go visit the Antarctic. It's beautiful. It's the last wilderness. We do have an international treaty for some reason that is the only treaty in the world that every country has signed and also does not violate. So could that be because there's something down there they don't want us to see and don't want us to learn? Or could it be we want to preserve the last proper wilderness in the world? But possibly it could be the future landing place of Diglaca. And we'll see you on the other side.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.